I'd known Lacey since high school, so when she asked if I'd like to be her roommate, I happily said yes. I trusted Lacey more than anyone, and I knew our personalities fit really well together. Lacey's boyfriend Joe was actually our landlord, which was why she got such a good deal on the place. She was always bragging about how handsome and rich he was, but I still hadn't met him. Based on Lacey's descriptions, he must have been the greatest guy in the world. Unfortunately, he wasn't the greatest landlord. Our bathtub had a constant drip and our balcony was unusable until he replaced the flooring. Lacey constantly asked him to come over and fix everything, but he was always too busy. I figured she wasn't being forceful enough. He wasn't my boyfriend, though. I promised myself that I'd demand the repairs as soon as I met him face to face. I lived in that apartment for over a month before I finally met Joe. I was alone at the time while Lacey was off at work. Joe knocked on the door, and when I answered, I was shocked at what I saw. Joe didn't look anything like the man Lacey had described. He was short and balding, and his eyes were really beady. Obviously, Lacey had exaggerated her description of him, which seemed like a weird thing to do. She must have known that I'd meet him eventually. I explained that Lacey wasn't home right now, but he said that he came here to meet me. He said that Lacey talked about me all the time, and he sincerely apologized for waiting so long before introducing himself. He waited for me to invite him in. I didn't feel comfortable doing that without Lacey home, but I also really wanted to talk to him about our bathtub and balcony problems. I invited him in, and he made himself comfortable on our couch. I'm a pretty direct person, so my instincts told me to cut to the chase. Joe, I'd like to talk to you about all the things we need fixed. We'll get to that in a second, he said, and then he started asking me about my life. I humored him, knowing that he'd be more likely to help us if he got to know me first. And besides, this was my roommate's boyfriend. She told me several times that he was the one, and even though he wasn't quite the catch that she described, she still loved the guy. I had to give him a chance. So I answered his questions and asked him a few of my own. He told me how he'd first met Lacey, how he'd inherited the building from his father, just basic stuff about his life. Honestly, he seemed like a nice enough guy. But as we talked, something surprised me. Nothing he said matched how Lacey had described him. Even the specifics of where they met and what they'd done together last weekend were different. He seemed to be getting more comfortable, scooting closer to me on the couch. I started to wonder if this really was Joe at all. I'd invited him into my apartment without asking to see ID. I believed him when he said he was Joe. But I had no reason to. It seemed to me that there were two possibilities. Either Lacey had lied repeatedly about her boyfriend, or this man was an imposter. I squirmed in my seat. The man definitely noticed. I don't want to take up too much of your time, he said. Why don't you tell me what repairs I need to do? I realized that this was my chance to find out for sure if I could trust him. I suggested that we walk onto the balcony and continue our discussion there. I waited for his reaction. The real Joe would know that our balcony floor was unstable. Lacey had told him a million times. An imposter would have no idea. Eventually, he agreed and walked towards the door to our balcony. He opened the door but didn't walk onto the dangerous platform. You coming? He asked over his shoulder. I told him I'd get us some coffee before joining him. He nodded and stepped onto the balcony. For a second, nothing happened. Maybe it wasn't as dangerous as Lacey had said. But then the floor under him made a loud crack and he dropped straight down. I ran to the window, but it was already too late. He'd fallen 4 stories. His body was lying dead on the concrete. Blood leaked out of his open mouth and his eyes stared blindly into the sun. I was horrified by the image. I just led a man to his death. But I also felt relief. Who knew what this man would have done to me if I hadn't tricked him? He was obviously a dangerous person. Suddenly, the door creaked open behind me, and I jumped back in surprise. Lacey had come home early from work. She innocently asked me how I was doing, so obviously she hadn't seen the body yet. I was about to tell her what happened when she interrupted me. She seemed a little nervous. Jen, my boyfriend Joe is supposed to come over sometime today, but before he does, there's something you need to know. We could hear ambulance sirens from the street. One of our neighbors must have called the cops. Lacey explained that she may have exaggerated a few things about Joe. He was actually short and bald, and he didn't have as much money as she'd implied. I felt my heart sink. "And the worst part is," she continued, "I lied to you about asking him to fix the balcony. I knew how annoyed you were about it, but I just couldn't bring it up to him. I didn't want to jeopardize our relationship." "So Joe had no idea that the balcony was dangerous?" I asked, my voice trembling. By then, we could hear a ton of commotion from the street below. Lacey joined me at the window. When she saw her dead boyfriend being loaded onto a stretcher, she turned toward me. "What did you do?"
It was a cold, rainy night when I finally finished my shift at the local 24-hour diner. There was a drizzle in the air and a fine mist on the horizon that eddied around the town like something living, seeping along the road towards me. It was late, just after midnight, and there were no buses running at that time, which meant that I had a 20-minute walk back to my apartment. I could have called for a cab, but the cost wasn't worth it when I had rent and bills due at the end of the week. I'd rather take my chances, even if it was a woman walking alone at night. I pulled up the hood of my raincoat to shield my face from the rain, even though it dampened my hearing and obscured my periphery more than I was comfortable with. For as long as the coat covered my ears, I wouldn't be able to hear if anyone was walking behind me. But the feeling of rain soaking through my skin was just as bad. Nobody else was out at that time anyway. At least, that's what I hoped. I zipped up my coat and shoved my hands into my pockets, hunching my shoulders forward against the wind. The street, as far as I was aware, was empty. No cars drove past, splashing through the puddles that had collected in the dips and rivets on the road. Even the buildings on the street beside me were doused in shadow, silent, asleep. It felt like the whole world had gone to sleep, except for me. A chill touched my nose and cheeks as my hood dipped back, and I yanked it back up, shivering. It was barely October, yet already it felt like winter had reared its ugly head. I was almost at the end of the street when I heard the distant crunch of tires behind me, and lights slanted across the road, illuminating the icy drizzle that was descending from the gray clouds above. A car, the first I'd seen since leaving work. I kept walking, but after a few seconds, I noticed the light was still behind me, but no car had driven past yet. A flutter of apprehension curled in my chest as I shot a brief glance over my shoulder. A car was creeping down the road behind me. The curtain of rain and the constant swiping of the windshield wipers made it impossible to see who was sitting in the car, and I felt weird for staring. So I faced forward again, not wanting to slip on a puddle. Why were they driving so slowly? The rain wasn't that heavy, and the roads weren't slick enough to cause any real hazard. Maybe they were lost? But who would be driving around aimlessly at this time of night? I kept walking, and the car still didn't overtake me. Then it struck me. The car was following me. Why else wouldn't it have driven off already? It was staying behind me for a reason. My heart jolted in my chest, and I looked back again. The car was still there, its headlights flooding the road. It wasn't being subtle about it, though. Maybe I was just overthinking things. But then, the car revved its engine and peeled closer, gliding right up towards the pavement where I was walking. I stopped and stumbled back, staring wide-eyed as the car stopped moving and the window rolled down, a voice floating out towards me through the fog. "Need a ride, love?" It was a man's voice, though I couldn't see his face in the shadows of the night and the rain. I took a step back, shaking my head vigorously. "No, I'm fine. I live just down the road," I said, my voice tight. I still had a few blocks to go before I reached my apartment, but he didn't have to know that. "It's no problem. Jump inside," the man continued, and I shook my head again. "Really, I'm fine." I turned away and kept walking, my heart pounding in my chest. Behind me, I heard tires squeal as the car trailed after me. Why wasn't he driving off? I'd already refused a lift. What was he going to do? Follow me all the way home? Or was he going to force me into the car? I rifled through my pockets for my phone, but I couldn't find it. Had I left it at the diner? Cursing at my own stupidity, I risked another glance behind me. The car was definitely following me, and it wasn't hiding the fact. I could run, but the car would easily catch up. What was I supposed to do? I was on a street with only a handful of residences, but maybe someone would be able to call the police or let me hide inside until the car left. It was worth a shot. Taking my chances, I ran to the nearest house and banged on the door. All the lights were off, but there was a car in the driveway, which meant that someone was home. I just hoped they'd answered. Behind me, the car crept closer as I kept knocking, growing more frantic. I was like a sitting duck out here. That man could easily come up and snatch me from behind. From within the house, I heard no movement. Either nobody was home or they were ignoring me. Either way, I wasn't getting any help. But before I could go to the next house, I heard a car door open behind me. Ice cold fear flooded my chest. Footsteps crunched on the street, the rain streaming down my face, panic tightening my lungs. "Is everything okay, ma'am?" The voice was different. I turned around, my eyes wide, and found a man in a police uniform standing on the drive behind me, shielding his face from the rain. Relief burst through my chest. There was a car following me, I explained, walking towards him. I got scared, so I tried knocking on someone's door, hoping they might help. The cop nodded, hooking a thumb over his shoulder to the cop car sitting behind him.
Want me to take you home? It's too late for you to be out here alone.
That would be a huge help. Thank you. I followed the cop to his car and I climbed into the passenger seat, wondering briefly where the other man had gone. Maybe he'd fled after seeing the police car. I gave him my address, only a 5-minute drive from where we were. But as we approached the street where my apartment was, the cop didn't slow down. He kept driving.
Oh, you just missed it, I said, frowning.
The cop turned to me, a smirk marring his face in the semi-darkness.
Yeah, I know, he sneered. Thanks to my buddy back there, you fell right into our little trap.
My eyes went wide with the realization. His buddy? Did he mean the man who'd offered me a lift? Were they working together? My heart jerked into my throat. But he was a cop. Wasn't I supposed to be able to trust and rely on people like him for help? With a panic cry, I reached for the door, only to find it locked.
Let me out!
I cried, slamming on the window with my palms, trying to smash the glass. The cop just laughed. Bulletproof glass, you won't be able to break him. I kept slamming my fist against the door, screaming to be let go. But he just kept driving, grinning like a maniac. Desperation overtook any kind of sense, and I lunged for the cop, grabbing the steering wheel out of his grasp and twisting it sharply to the left. He shouted in surprise, just as the front of the police car crashed into the brick wall outside someone's house. I was thrown forward from the impact, the seatbelt dragging me back before I could hit the windshield, and the cop smashed his head on the steering wheel before the airbag had a chance to deploy. With the cop unconscious beside me and smoke rising from the bonnet, I hit the button to unlock the door and threw it open, stumbling out into the rain. When one of the neighbors came out to investigate the commotion, I explained to her what had happened while we waited for the police to arrive, leaving that cop in the smoking car. It's safe to say, I grew far more wary of cops after that, and would think twice about trusting one if I was ever alone again on a rainy night. Every year, my sister Linda invited my husband and me to her house for Thanksgiving dinner. Our parents had already passed, and we didn't have any other family in the area, so it was always just the four of us. My husband, Luke, hated to go because he said that Linda only wanted us there to show off her fancy house and whatever new car her husband had just bought for her.
I grew up with my sister, so I was better able to ignore her snobby behavior. Everything changed this year when her husband Steve got arrested for embezzlement. Their perfect life was built on money that he had been stealing from his job. He was in jail now, and most of their possessions were confiscated by the government. She was still able to keep her massive house, but it was mostly empty. Because of that, I invited Linda to spend Thanksgiving at our house. Before she arrived, I had a little talk with Luke, asking him to ignore any of her judgmental comments about our small house. I knew that if she said anything offensive, he'd immediately go off on her for marrying a criminal. He said he'd do his best, but I wasn't sure if he could control himself. Now, of course, as soon as she arrived, she said, "Oh, your house is so much smaller than I remember." Luke almost responded, but he stopped himself. After that, Linda didn't say anything too offensive. In fact, she kept complimenting us on our decorations. She said that our house was so much more inviting than her empty McMansion. I could tell she was really trying to be civil. After we finished eating, Linda asked if we could go outside and see our yard. Our house was on a 5-acre lot, and Luke took a lot of pride in all the trees he'd planted. We left the dirty dishes in the sink and walked outside. Luke tried to show Linda the new fruit trees that he'd planted around the house, but she wanted to keep going to the far corner of our property, where the ground sloped up into a hill. We had a nice cluster of trees in that area, and she said it felt like a park. So we walked far away from the house. Luke was explaining all the types of trees that he'd chosen, but I could tell that Linda wasn't listening. Her expression seemed slightly devious. I told them that I was getting cold and I wanted to go back inside, but Linda insisted that we stay there and watch the sunset. We could barely see the sun through the trees, though. And that's when I realized that Linda was purposely distracting us. She wanted to keep us away from our house, but I couldn't figure out why. Luke didn't notice anything weird. He kept droning on about his trees, and Linda kept pretending to listen. Then, Linda pulled out her phone to check the time. Yeah, she was definitely up to something. She put her phone back in her pocket and she said, "Oh my God, do you guys smell that?" I didn't smell anything. "Something's burning," she said. "Did you remember to turn off the stove?" Of course I turned off the stove. "I think your house is on fire," she screamed and raced out of the trees. Luke and I looked at each other. We both had the same question. What was she up to? We followed her back to the house, and of course it wasn't on fire. Linda was standing in front of our back door looking genuinely panicked. "Oh, guess you were wrong," Luke said, and opened the door.
"Don't go in!"
She grabbed his arm. He shook her off and walked inside. I followed. Inside the house, the smoke alarm was still beeping, but there wasn't any sign of a fire. We walked into the kitchen, and sure enough, there were 3 burned-up towels on the stove. There was also water everywhere. Our house had sprinklers installed in every room, and they had been activated while we were outside. I turned toward Linda to ask her how she knew that a fire had broken out, but she wasn't there. I looked out the front window and I saw that her car was gone. Then, Luke called for me from the living room. When I walked in, I was shocked to see that most of our stuff was missing. Our TV and speakers, our couch, all the paintings on our walls. "What's going on?" I asked him. "I have no idea," he said. We talked about calling the police, but we didn't know what to say. Instead, we called Linda. She didn't answer. Then we went to the front yard, where Luke noticed a fresh set of tire tracks that hadn't been there before. We both had smaller vehicles, but these looked like they were from a big truck or van. We followed the tracks down our long driveway. Because we lived in a wooded area, our driveway wound through a bunch of trees, so it took a while to reach the end. When we did, we saw a moving van crashed into a ditch. Linda's car was parked right next to it. We could hear Linda screaming at the man in the van. Before we revealed ourselves, Luke turned to me and said, "I think I know what happened." He explained that my sister had planned to distract us while she paid someone to sneak into our house and rob us. And to cover her tracks, she tried to burn our house down so that we'd never know we were robbed. She didn't know that the sprinklers would immediately put out the fire. She also didn't know that the idiot she'd hired would literally crash the van while they were still on our property. Her scheme had backfired spectacularly.
As soon as he explained everything, I knew that he was 100% right. Just like her husband, Linda had tried to break the law and failed miserably. We walked closer. Linda noticed us right away. She stopped screaming at her driver and ran to us. "You were being robbed!" she screamed, faking surprise. "Oh no," Luke said, hiding a smile. "Should I call 911?
"No, don't do that," she said.
"And why not?" I asked. She didn't have an answer. And that's when the driver stepped out of the moving van. I didn't recognize him. He glared at Linda for a second and then approached us. "She told me this was her house. I'm guessing she lied to me, so you should probably call the police." I spent the rest of Thanksgiving talking to the police. Linda's in jail now, just like her husband.